Let's get to our Sigya. Okay, so today we said we're going to pick up with the discussion of Hamocher Sabayis, Mocher Sasfina, as it relates to Minhag HaSochrim, right? Any follow-up comments from the last year? Are we good to jump right into the new material, right? Okay, so a little overview. If you study the fourth and fifth prakim, even if you skim through Abba Basra, even if you just skim through the Mishnayos, you have all the dinim of what's included in a sale. Right? If you sell a house, is the basement included? If you sell a house, is the garage included? If you sell a boat, is the sail included? Is the engine included? Right? Are the life vests included? V'chahina rabos, right? For all sales, there's a question of what's included in the sale. Actually, Ray Weissman told me that there's a case at the Beis Din now, very interesting case, about these people who did a special bison shechita. Apparently, there's exotic meat industry of Orthodox Jews who want to eat bison. So they shechted a bunch of bison, and now they're litigating. Like one party bought like all the meat or something, and like or like everything beneath the head. And there's like some question about like certain parts of the animal. Like, was that part of the mechira? So exactly this question that actually comes up in the Tosefta, if you saw that, about what's included in the purchase of animal meat. So you have a lot of examples of this. If you sell a wagon, does that include the animals that pull the wagon? V'chule, v'chule. The Rashbam, in one formulation, well, let me say this. The Gemara itself, in a few cases, indicates that minhag is relevant. So if you sell the Gemara on Samech Aleph and Mebez, the Gemara says, if you sell a bayis lechavera bibira gedola, what's included? So the Gemara says, hechidam yile medekarule lebayis bayis ulebira bira pshita. Bayis zavenle, bira lo zavenle, right? If you have separate words for a mansion versus a hut or a house, then you should be able to precisify or disambiguate the transaction based off custom, right? Like, what do people normally call it? And then later on in Ayin Zayin Amabez, in Bava Basra also, the Gemara talks about if you're machar es hatzemed, lo machar es habakar. And the Gemara says, what do you mean? These aren't just like objective rules about like ontologically speaking in the Torah's universe, what constitutes a house? What constitutes a wagon pulling system, right? That's not going to determine what's included in the sale. What should really determine it is e lema dekaru litzimda tzimdo lebakar bakar pshita. How do you kind of look to what people actually refer to when they use these terms? Correct? So the Gemara itself seems to indicate that usage is primary. And the Rashbam adds this a little explicitly based off the Tosefta, lo machar saraglayim. The Gemara talks about if I sell you the front of an animal, does that include the legs of the animal in the sale of meat? And the Tosefta says, Bamadur Amurim, this is the way the Rashbam quotes it, it's not an our Tosefta. So take it away, Benji, just read this line. B'makom.
B'makom shalonagu, shalonagu, aval b'makom shenagu, l'kol k'menaga medina.
Yeah, so these rules are only applicable when?
Only in a place absent of minhag. But if there is a minhag, then you follow that minhag. But I mean, exactly. This is just talking about referring to, like, how people refer to things. Like, if it's a minhag to call, is that, I guess maybe not. You're right.
Well, let me say this. Let's say you sell me your house in Teaneck, right? And now there's a Shiloh. Is the fridge and the washing machine and the dishwasher, is that sold along with the house?
Right. I guess, yeah. So then
right? We all agree that your clothes are not sold along with the house, correct?
Right.
Or it's a Shiloh about the fridge and the, like, all the major appliances. So usually there are rules that determine those things. I bet the law in New Jersey is that those things, if they're attached to the house in some way, those get sold along with the house. Okay. Now, the halacha, I don't see why it's a priori inconceivable that the halacha should have rules about those things as well. Right? That should be absolutely binding. The halacha says if you sell a boat, that includes the whole heftza of the boat, including the sale. Right, Benji, I don't think we should rule out a priori that the halacha could take a stand on that. But instead, the halacha, you know, the Rishonim here are saying, oh, really, it all these really depend on minhag. And these questions about what's the halachic conception of a boat, that's only relevant by Makom Shein Minhag. See what I'm saying, Benji? Meaning, I agree with you that Lifum Riata, at like the prima facie level, there's an intuition that the fourth and fifth prakim are different because these should depend on Minhag. But I think upon deeper reflection, it's not obvious at all that these should be more Makbid on Minhag than other types of.
Right. Well, it seems that like all of Hamochar to Bayer Mochar to Sfino is just kind of like clarifying an ambiguity. Meaning when it's not explicit in the contract, there is this way of ambiguity. So I guess it is more intuitive to then go to Minhag and saying, well, since everyone else, when they say that they're selling their house, they also sell their fridge, therefore it must have been the dot of the mocher to also be putting the fridge up for sale when he said that I'm selling my house.
True, but you could have gone all halachic man and said, no, the halacha has a conception of what a boat is. The halacha has a conception of what a house is.
Right.
And when you sell a house in Jewish law, this is what's sold. You hear what I'm saying?
Yeah, I hear that.
Okay, so we have the Tosefta and Babasra as well. This is what the Rashbam was alluding to. Notice the Rashbam's formulation was a little more general. B'makom shenagu akol k'minhag ha'medina. That's a very broad statement of it. Right, and again, b'amadvar amurim b'makom shelo nagu. All these halachas are only relevant b'makom shein minhag. In the Tosefta, Perek Dal Halachaches, you have this, not as explicitly as the Rashbam has it, but close. Romy, you want to take it away? Hamocher Sarosh?
Yeah, Hamocher Sarosh, Behim Adak, Kalomacher Salechi, Vima Etavach, Kohen Harizam Mocher, Machor, Hamocher Etarosh, Behim Agas, sorry, Harizam Machor, Hamocher Etarosh, Behim Agasa, Lomacher Etaraglai, Makum Shnagulim, Kor Hare Elim Mokor.
So you have a din. Right. If you're mocher sarosh or you mocher salachi, when it comes to selling meat, if you're mocher sarosh or you mocher the raglayim, and what does the Tosefta qualify that by saying?
That depends on minhag ha'makom.
Yeah. That these dinim are true by default, but if there's a minhag to the contrary, then you follow the minhag. Makom shnagulim kar harilim mechuros. Good. Okay. And when you get to the Rishonim are even more explicit about this. So here you have, this goes back to Sefer HaMekach Umimkar of Rav Haigon, right? He says, when you're dealing with transactions, when someone just sells something stam and doesn't explicate, Ve'ena Mefaresh Beferush, right? We have to disambiguate, exactly as Benji said before, right? So how do you disambiguate? So he gives us a few principles, okay? So hachelak hasheni of disambiguation is to try to interpret the meaning of the words, right? And then he says, if you can't interpret the words, like the words don't have clear cut meanings, right? So read this line for us, Rami. V'imein ani yicholim.
V'imein ani yicholim lamid min alashon harei anu chozim al minag hamakomos shamecher nimkar. Baloso minag shel shokim.
So he said this argument is a little interesting if you think about it. What's his main point here? Could take a minute to read it again to yourself if you just want to reflect on it. What's the main point here?
Meaning what determines kind of like what a person means in the Stam case. You know, or what his words mean is what those words mean in a particular place.
He does say that. That's true. Let me put it a little differently. He's definitely advocating for minhag, right? He says minhag will disambiguate the sale. What's his little argument? His argument is, look, hey, the meaning of words is determined by minhag. Hare anu roim ledvarim sheyesh lahem shem sheholchen achara minhag hakriya. right? The extension of what a word means is oftentimes defined by minhag, right? So he says, therefore, kol shekein, that with respect to what's included in a sale, we should defer to minhag. Meaning separate from just like literally what did the words coming out of the mouth or the words on the document mean. He's just saying, look, minhag plays a big role in transactions, so we should defer to minhag to determine what's included in it. So I think the idea is like, look, when I sell you my house, it's not that the meaning of house includes the appliances or the chandelier. It's just saying the minhag is to treat those as part of the sale. And that has halachic force on its own, right? It's not, he's not necessarily saying that like, oh, we know that what the contract refers to is the dishwasher as well. It's not a question of like the meaning, philosophy of language, like reference and meaning. He's saying, you see that minhag has this halachic power. Okay, let's just look at the Rambam's formulation because the Rambam's formulation is very striking. So let's look at Mechira, Perek Chaf Vav, Halacha Zayin. Benji, take it away. It's this very broad formulation of the Rambam.
Off the Mokav Relokach, in Kol Elu Hadvarim Vikiyot Behen, me Inyanim Omrim, Ela Bimokam She'en Sham Minhag. Velo Shemot Yodoim, Lekol Davar Vidavar, Lefi Atzmo. Aval Bimokam Shenagu, Shah Mokher Kach, Mokher Kach, Hareze Mokher.
Yeah, beautiful. All right, so the Rambam says all these rules that we just read are only applicable b'makom she'ein sham minhag. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, good. Whenever there's a minhag about what's included in the sale, somchin al minhag. It's a very nice formulation. And Benji, take it away also halacha ches in that same parak chavav halacha ches.
Zei ikar gadol v'chol divrei mishal matan holchin achar lashon b'nei adam. I guess if they're unaware of the minhag, then it doesn't apply.
Yeah, exactly. I think if there's no clear cut minhag, or if you have reason to. It's an interesting question. If you have reason to believe the parties were not participating in the minhag, right?
Right. Is it that there is no minhag, or just that the participants don't know about the minhag?
This line of al makom she'en yadua bo minhag clearly means if you're in a place where there's no established minhag, like there's no known practiced minhag.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, I don't think it means that like the parties don't know the minhag, right? Yeah. I just want to, again, same diak as in the Rav Haigon. I think there are two dinim in this Rambam here. One is Shemos Yiduim. Holchen achar lashon b'nei adam. Follow the language. And then separately follow minug. Right? One, I think, is a theory about like what do these parties mean. The other is like what are the normative rules that govern their transaction. Okay. And again, I really just want to emphasize like when you look at it already through the lens of minhag ha-socharim, this is Dover Pasha. Because as we indicated a moment ago, there's no more intuitive area of halacha for which minhag should govern than this type of issue, what's included in a sale. On the other hand, if you're just sitting and learning the fourth and fifth prakim, I think you would come to the conclusion that these are the dinim that should always govern sales between two Jews. And then the Rishonim come along. And again, it's meduyak a little bit in two passages in the Gemara, right? Dekari labayas, bayas, and bira bira. But the Rishonim are very clear that this is all limited to makom shein minhag. Okay, so it's, you have to get over that the Gemara's, I know Romy is always interested in this question, right? Like the Gemara presents it one way, but conceptually speaking, that the Gemara's presentation is almost the exception to the rule. Right? Like we saw in our sugya in Bav Metzia. There's a din Torah of Lahashkim Ulahariv. Velechzi Heichin Higin. Right? A reconceptualization of it. Okay. Comments, questions? You guys find this discussion a little bit of a chiddush, or this is all obvious? I think if you had learned the fourth and fifth prakim and then separately came back to this, it would be more like, whoa. Okay. Like imagine if you said the same thing about Cheskas Abatim. Okay. All right. I want to now move us to a broader discussion of Minhag HaSochrim, and that is the Marshach, which Rabbi Akiva Eiger quotes. That's Marshach and Beis Reish Chavtes. The Marshach, we had encountered him a few times in our discussions this year. He's an early modern posek from Saloniki. I'm pretty sure it's Saloniki. I have to double check. But we saw a few fascinating tshuvas from him. And this tshuva has become central in discussions of Minhag HaSochrim, especially because Rabbi Akiva Eiger quotes it in Choshen Mishpat Siman Gimel. So it's that really mainstreamed what would otherwise be a more obscure tshuva of the Marshach. So let's look at it inside. And then we'll talk about some later interpretations of it. Okay, let's see. What's the best place to start here? You both prepared this, right? Benji, you didn't get to it?
No, I didn't get to it.
Are you guys learning together?
We sometimes were yesterday, kind of. Not last night.
Before, got like, it. Now. Yeah, because we did late. See, the problem with shear too frequently.
Late right. Shear and early shear.
Yeah. Right. Killer. So let's just start looking, starting from, I would say here, Nafal HaHefresh Bein Yorshe Reuven LeShimon. Go for it, Rumi.
Okay, so I'm the Mehechash Einach Yivin Verkin Yivin Yon Elish Nafal HaHefresh Bein Yorshe Reuven LeShimon Verotim L'chai V'Lamot B'din HaSochrim Shidona B'neihem K'minag V'net Tinitzia.
That's Venice.
Yeah, and kia is meaning so right. One party wants to make the other one follow the minhag of Venice.
Yeah, and kia yeah, so the Yorshim of Reuven seems like wanna obligate Shimon, who is their father's business partner, right, to be held accountable to adjudicate this dispute in accordance with the minhag of Venice. Lamod bidin hasochrim. It's not clear what din hasochrim means. What do you take it to mean?
I mean, I just thought it was the common practice of the, meaning, I don't know, the law of the, I mean, maybe, I don't know, I guess it's
the custom, maybe the custom of merchants, right? Yeah. Or the rules of merchants. So let's say if you were a merchant in Venice, there were certain accepted rules of commerce. Now there's two Jews, a dispute between them. Is their dispute going to be governed by Choshen Mishpat? Right. Or by the rules that normally govern disputes between commercial partners, right? In this, that's how I understand it. How do you understand it, Romy?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. So yadunu beinehem, that they should adjudicate the dispute as is customary in Venice. And what's the argument to apply this Venetian custom, Jan?
Jan ki esek shasa ruvin avihem. What is that?
It's kind of Alav Shalom.
Yeah, I see. Right. Okay. Shimon Hanizkar Hayasham.
Meaning the business deal, the ASEC, right, that was between the parties was done where?
In Venice.
Exactly.
Right. Man Lemalan Shiyuchlu L'chayva Al-Kach V'shalo Yochal Shimon Liton Ki Im Yesh Lehem Eze Hefresh V'tviya Shidino Al-Ki Ator Kvi Makom Atviya.
So what's the argument of Shimon, basically?
He basically said that the apparently in the makom of the tfiyah, wherever that is, the custom was to follow Torah, I guess.
It's not clear if you even have to say that the custom was to follow Torah, or just like it was, like there was no minhag of Venice, so by default it should be din Torah, right?
Yeah, I guess I just have assumed there's always a minhag. So, I mean, yeah.
Right. But the point is, man lema lan
shalo yuchal. He's basically saying they should follow din Torah, and they're saying they should follow the minhag of the makom of the deal. Yeah, right.
Exactly. So the question is, can Shimon say he has a right to be adjudicated according to din Torah, or can the Yorshim of Reuven say no? The business deal was done in Venice, so the dispute should be governed by Venetian custom. Now, again, I just want to emphasize that this is a much broader extension of minhag than we've seen so far. So far, we've seen minhag and like the workday hours. Is this Kenyan Chal? Here we're talking already about the rules. It sounds to me that we're dealing with the rules of decision to resolve a dispute.
Right.
Right? Okay. So does Dintor apply or does Minhag Venice apply? So what does he say? V'omer, this is the Marshach writing.
Right. V'omer da'af al gab d'l'chor yirahachi im kol zeh kad ma'aynan shapi yir d'kushra d'melti'hi she'cholam yor she'ruven l'chof l'shemon v'adun b'din ha'sochrim api Minhag Venitia kem v'chenasa sham esek.
Oh.
I mean, even though you might think that you should have to, you know, you should be able to force them to follow Din Torah.
I love that. It's like a nod. It's a nod to the intuition. It's like, oh yeah, right. Of course, you would think that Din Torah should apply, but.
Right. But actually, the Yorshim of Reuven can force Shimon to follow Din Torah, you know, follow the Minhag of Venice, because that's where the Esek happened.
Oh, so now the question is, what's the halachic basis for this? How could you abandon Din Torah for Minhag HaSochrim? So what does it say? Venomar.
Venomar shadavar yadua b'inyani hakniyot v'aschorot b'kol inyani masumat and shenagu asochrim b'iskehem yesh lanu lalechet achar minhagehem v'afilu b'stam minhag.
Oh, so notice how broad this phrasing is.
Yeah.
V'inyani hakniyot. Yeah. So what do we have here, Romy? Translate okay. each word there.
Okay. Kniyot are like... or purchases or transactions, or
yeah, acquisitions,
yeah. And schorot are sales,
merchandise, mm-hmm. right? Commerce,
and becholin any masumatan is like any kind of commerce,
yeah, any kind of business dealings,
right? Shenaga so from this game, right? So basically, everything, any business,
yeah, kolin yane masumatan. All inyane schora, right? It seems much broader than like what constitutes a valid maisa kinyan.
Right.
So at the beginning we started with maisa kinyan, maybe davar shilaboli olam davar shem b'mamish. When you read this marshach, you get the sense that it applies quite broadly, right? Now, what's the makar for this? We have a statement. He says, "Davar yadua." What's the makar? V'ikar din.
Right. V'ikar din zeh nilman mehadamar apapa perkei zuneshech haisi tumta batra de regil mikni kani. Situmta.
So yeah, situmta. Do you think this is an extension? Is this a broad generalization? Is going beyond the actual case of situmta?
Seems like it.
Totally, right? So I think at the beginning, you were very conservative on Tzitumta, right? In the Chabal Chidusho. But I think this Marshach is a wonderful example of the broadest interpretation of Tzitumta.
Yeah.
Benji, you agree?
Yeah, I mean, it looks like it.
Yeah, it's huge, right? I mean, it just extends it writ large almost to all type of commercial dealings. And he explicitly grounds it in Tzitumta. Again, it's also, again, this gets back to Romy's other points about the Gemara's presentation versus Situmta is thrown, it's tucked away at the end of Ezu Neshach as like a statement about a Maisa Kinyan. But conceptually, what it seems to stand for in Halacha is something much, much more substantial.
Yeah, bothering me in the same, that way, yeah.
Right, so for example, if I was writing my Shulchan Aruch, organized conceptually, I would say, here are the halachos of Minhag HaSochrim, right? And I would present it like I'm presenting this year. You know, Minhag HaSochrim, we see in the Gemara, it applies in these cases, right? Not like tucked away within Hilchos Kinyan, here's a sif, like, you know, about, you know, the way the Gemara has it, tucked away in the end of Ezu Neshach. Okay. Good. He also cites the Magen Mishnah, citing the Rashba in Ezu Neshach. Again, I think the Rashba made significant strides. Remember, he had a broad formulation on the Situm Tesugya. He cites Kamarava Magid, B'Shem Rashba, Shma Minach, Yaminag Mevata Halacha, B'chol Kayotze Beze. Ad Hilkach B'chol Davar Shenogu HaTagarim Liknos Konen. So he cites the Yushalmi Minag Mevata Halacha. So again, admittedly, the Yushalmi, I think, was very strong language. And he thinks the fact that the Rashba cites that Yushalmi, again, when we read this Rashba, we noted that it was limited to Kinyonim, but he thinks that's a step in his direction of the broad interpretation of Situmta. Okay, good? Okay, now I'll read the next line. Imkain. So after this theoretical discussion of the power of Minhag, the Marshach continues.
אם כן, מאחר שרובין נסה ונתנים שימו רמקום שנגו שלא יצטרכו בעסקי מדין מדין תורה.
Notice that very, very interesting phrase that clearly the
have to call after Din Torah.
Right, meaning the minhag in Venice was literally like not to have to go according to Din Torah. Right. What does that mean?
Not sure.
Here. Read this whole thing to yourself for a second. Try to get a picture of what he's saying.
I mean, at the end of it, I understand. At the end of it, he's saying that if it had been that they were in a place where the minhag was to follow Din Torah, then of course he would just follow Din Torah and like take that, and he wouldn't, and they wouldn't have the right to like.
Right, but he's saying a little different here. I think what he's saying here is, look, he's doing a thought experiment, and this is very important. He says, look, Shehaya Minha Nimnaos, it's inconceivable, right, that somebody would lisa vilitain, that somebody would do business. That somebody should do business just to undercut, right, the very business that they're trying to do. Meaning it'll be incoherent first, and here's what he fleshes out in a second. It'll be incoherent for somebody to do business one way, knowing that the business that they're doing is totally null and void because it's not halakhically legitimate. So he says, Hayitachin shenomar. Does it make sense that we would say that somebody would do business relying on the practice of minhag ha-sochrim, right? That's going to be valid. But nevertheless, hadavar hayadua she'im oso ha'esek v'ma'oro she'ifshar she'yiru b'oso ha'esek hayonidonim b'din Torah, but at the same time knowing that if they were going to adjudicate the dispute according to Din Torah, then hiniach ma'osav al keren hatzviv yocha halav v'chadi. The business partner was so stupid, the business dealing was so incoherent, and that they didn't protect themselves legally. It's as if the business partner literally put his money on the antlers of a deer and had it run off so that somebody else could eat his money. See that? Meaning, basically saying it's totally incoherent. It's crazy to think that we're going to say, look, the parties did business according to minhag ha-sochrim, knowing that their dispute will be resolved according to Din Torah, which would just undercut everything they were trying to do according to minhag ha-sochrim. Meaning, does it make sense that I will be trying to buy Benji's house in Teaneck, and I draft everything according to a secular contract, and we're relying on secular law, knowing that we could just go to Beis Din and be mevatel the whole asek that we put together with a lot of money and effort, according to minhag?
Yeah, but then all he did was shift the focus or the question to why the original ASEC was allowed to be done that way.
So one second. So I think his point here is that uvali safek lo hayeruven osa ASEC imayim. I think what he's trying to say that it's so clear that the parties intended to be bound by minhag ha-sochrim, even for the dispute resolution of it.
Right.
Okay. Let me think about this a little more. It's not clear to me if he's saying that the parties clearly assumed or desired for it to be resolved according to minhag ha-sochrim, or he's saying that equitably It would be crazy for the. It would be crazy to say they did business assuming minhag, and then we're gonna hit them with a decision that totally unwinds or undoes the business that they thought they were accomplishing. He does say, "V'lis safek lo haya Ruvain." Osa Asek, that sounds like the intent of the parties, right? There's no way Reuven would have done business if he thought it was going to be adjudicated according to Din Torah, right? So then read this line. V'im Kain, here's where he summarizes.
V'im Kain, hayalel adas shahaya osa esek imo al smach osa minak shav osa makom v'achar kach yatzel makom acher v'yif sholo et haregel v'yomer ein ritoni laduna p'ya minak makom masa matan el k'ya makom hatfiya. Meaning, would it make sense to do a transaction based on the minhag of a particular place and then go somewhere else where, and like have that be undermined based on the minhag of a different place?
Yeah, exactly. Does it make sense that you and I agree to do business according to custom just so that I could stick out my foot later and trip you over by forcing you to adjudicate right according to Din Torah? So I think that's clearly what he's saying. But now look at this line.
In Cain,
Afo.
Eifo lo shavak chay lekol beria.
What does that mean?
Meaning, you basically like there's no there are like no limits on one, like basically no bounds to the deal at all. You could just go anywhere and have the rule be different, and then get your way out of it.
It might mean that lo shavak chay lekol beria has it's used in the Gemara a few times, and it's taken up by the Rishonim and a lot of cases. Do you know what it connotes? Basically, it just means that like people won't be able to live.
Yeah.
You've left no life for the creations. I think it basically means that like, to my mind, that's a phrase that either connotes you're destroying commerce, right? You made commerce extremely cumbersome and inefficient, or it means that like you are acting unfairly because you're upsetting the predictable rules that people are relying on. And how are people supposed to live if they rely on a set of rules just for you to pull those rules out from underneath? Because like when people talk about precedent, why precedent and law is important. So what type of consideration is that then? About when we talk about the authority of minhag here, right? Because that's, he's explaining Situmta, he's explaining this broad, this idea of applying Menega Sochrim. To my mind, this formulation at the end might suggest that, yeah, it's something akin to an equitable consideration, right? The halacha wants people to be able to rely on steady rules, right? It's a kiyum.
You could understand this.
No, go ahead.
I think the problem with that is that could be true, and that doesn't mean that the stable rule shouldn't be Din Torah.
Right.
Like, he didn't here explain why the original Esek should have been bound by, or should have been based on, or should have been allowed to be based on the Minhag of Venice as opposed to Din Torah in the first place.
Correct. That's a deeper question that we have to take up. And I think just to frame it slightly and to reinforce what you're saying, is you could say it's an open question whether it was a good thing or a bad thing that the original Asek was done Shelo Kafi Din Torah. But the question before the Marshach is Bidiyeved. Given that it was done a certain way, ex post facto, what's the proper way to resolve the dispute? Do we say they did a Kafi Minhag HaSochrim, so now they adjudicate Kafi Minhag HaSochrim? Or do we say, who cares how they did it? We'll force them into a Din Torah dispute resolution.
I mean, his answer is still a Chiddush because even if you say that it, you know, okay, it happened according to this, the minhag of this, right, the minhag of Venice, if we really, like, we could very easily imagine a world where we say, no, but we value Din Torah. Like, you don't follow our rules, it's not our problem.
Vada, right? Of course. We know many people who would think that way, right?
Yeah, I guess I just think it's a chiddush on two fronts.
Yes.
Or he didn't explain the other one, but.
Correct. Yeah. But for again, I just want to emphasize this, the rationale here at the end is one of the very interesting things, that one of the unique perspectives that the Marshach brings to the table in this discussion of Minhag HaSochrim. Again, even if it's just an ex post facto consideration, oh, like, I, you know, if you ask me in advance, I would say that the deal should have been done a Kfi Din Torah. I'm not endorsing what goes on in Venice. But given that business was done that way, this is how it has to be resolved. For example, at the Beis Din, the case is we don't control the chatchila, how people do business. People come with a machlokas afterwards. So the question is, what's the right way to resolve the dispute? You say, oh, the minhag in New Jersey is that this law would apply. Or do you say, who cares that these guys were doing business according to New Jersey law? Now they're in Beis Din, and Beis Din should apply pure Chosheh Mishpat principles. Right, that's kind of the analog to the Marshach. But I think the unique perspective that he brings in that answer, Lo Shafkes Chai L'Chol Birya, and how could it be that they are relying on local custom, and then it would be wrong to pull the carpet out from underneath them and apply halacha, that seems like some sort of equitable consideration, right? In explaining the authority of Minhag HaSochem here. Benji, you have a hand on this?
Yeah, how is it? I guess I'm just confused about what you mean by an equitable consideration. Like, it seems like it's just a practical, like, utilitarian, this is what's best for society so that people can actually do business.
Right. I think you could look at it in that way. Like, this, the halacha here is a political economy and wants business to run as smoothly as possible, blah, blah, blah. You could read Lo Shafkes Chai L'Chol Birya that way. Like, maybe like Kadesh Lotin Aldalas Bifnei Lovin type thing. I'm reading it, so I agree. You could look at it this way, but you could also say, like, oh, you've left no room for people to live, meaning it's unfair, it's wrong to say, oh, everybody was on the board thinking X, but as a matter of halacha, we say that they all got it wrong, and now we say actually the transaction was not X. You see that? It's the fact that you're I keep losing the phrase, is it railroading them? No. Whatever, you end up hitting them like from the other side that they're not expecting. All right, so that's like an unfairness type of consideration. All right, it's not fair to say, oh yeah, they thought they were doing business one way and they were both on board. There's a meeting of the minds between the parties, but now we're just going to come and invalidate all of that. Okay, good. Meaning you're giving recognition to the fact that people came to rely and all believed and were on the same page that this business deal was going to work a certain way. All right, Benji? Again, it wasn't irrational for them. It wasn't irrational for them to think that because they were relying on Minhag.
Right.
Okay, great. Now, let me just say two things to round out this Marshach. When he says they're going to adjudicate according to Minhag HaSochrim, according to Minhag Venezia, it's important to distinguish between two claims. One is before whom they're going to adjudicate, and the other is what type of rules are going to govern the decision. So in contemporary postgame, there's some ambiguity about whether this Marshach is referring to which panel is going to adjudicate the dispute. Some read the Marshach as saying that the minhag in Venice was to have like non-Jewish merchants or just merchants sit as the dayanim, as the arbitrators to decide the case. Others read this Marshach as saying the minhag was that you go to Beis Din, but the Beis Din applies the rules of Minhage Venezia. Do you have a... But there seems to be a consensus that nobody thinks that they were going to like courts in Venice. It wasn't like you were going to like the Christian courts or to the king's courts. Everyone thinks that would be usher. But maybe the Marshach is saying it's kosher if there's a minhag to adjudicate between some like panel of arbitrators that's binding in halacha. So it's not just that, if that's the case, then the Marshach is not just saying that the rules of dispute could be determined by Minhag, but also Gufa, whether you go to Beis Din or to some professional industry type of arbitration to resolve disputes. Do you guys see the difference? So what do you think he's saying? La'amod bedin hasochrim sheyadunu b'neim k'minhag Venezia. That's the phrase you have in the Marshach. It's a little ambiguous, right? But what do you think this means if you read it, Benji?
It seems that he's indicating that, like, the arbitration of the whatever it is, the drywall guild arbitrating board, right?
You
The
think so?
Din HaSochrim. Yeah.
Right. But you could say Bedin HaSochrim just means the laws, the rules of the Sochrim, right? That a Beis Din should adjudicate between them according to Minhag Venetia. That's one way to read it. But I hear, Benji, you want to read it as
Because
Bedin
they're
HaSochrim, like.
La Mode Bedin HaSochrim. They're not like La Mode Beit Din or La.
Yeah, interesting. You could read it that way. If you look at Rabbi Akiva Eiger, who cites this in Choshen Mishpat Siman Gimel, he says, yeah, let's read this, Benji. Just read his, he cites the Marshach, a Machlokas.
Shah Allah Machloka ben Tova Lin Linitva, Echadomer Shiratsunu Lita Den Ben Din Torah, Echadomer She Inlo Lita Den Ella Bifiachirim.
Ella,
Shikahu
read that again, Ella.
Ella Bifne Achirim.
Oh.
Shikah.
So what does that mean? Not kifid inter ela bifnei
Right, meaning rather in like a board of arbitration.
Yeah, that's right. It sounds almost like he's saying, look, Reuven's the Yorshe Reuven's taina is to adjudicate bifnei acherim. Sounds like a different type of panel, right? Of like the professional merchants of Venice. They were sit as the dayanim on the dispute.
Right. So you're saying that Rabbi Akiva Eiger reads the Shach as not like as according to the Board of Arbitration.
I think so. That's right. Benji, Romy, do you agree with that reading?
Of Rabbi Akiva
Yeah.
Eiger, yeah.
Yeah. Correct. And Rabbi
Yeah.
Akiva Eiger's, it's slightly different from the Marshach himself.
Right.
Right. And that would be based on Minhag. So I think you have here in Rabbi Akiva Eiger a really broad extension of Minhag HaSochrim to basically, even you could have a Minhag to not go to Beis Din per se, but rather to go to some board of arbitrators. Again, it may not work to go to secular courts for other reasons we'll talk about next year a little bit. But I think this Rabbi Akiva Eiger even goes a step beyond the simple reading of the Marshach. Here, just read this line also. Kivan divimok. He says Anas hai, he says Adinimo, that you din is with Reuven, that you could force to go bifnei acherim. Why? Kivan.
Kevin de Bimakom Shinasu Haosik Yesh Minhag Lita Den Fi Derech HaSochrim Blok Fi Din Torah Minhag Mevatel Halacha Hevia Hi
Desitimta.
De Situmta, right?
Yeah.
Meaning since it's actually the Minhag to not go in front of the Din Torah, then and we follow Minhag as the precedent of Situmta.
Exactly. If you look at the Pesachei Tshuva here in Siman Gimel, he cites the Marshach a little differently. He says, "Al machloka shenafla bein toveya lenitba, echa mehem omer sherotza lehisdayin bedin Torah, ve'echad omer she'ein lo lehisdayin rak bedine sochrim." So here, I think rak bedine sochrim, could imply the rules of sochrim,
Right.
right? So the Pesachei Tshuva might read the Marshach the way we read it initially, that it's just more about the rules of dispute. But of course, it'd be a standard Beis Din that's deciding it. Good. It's interesting that the Rabbi Akiva Eiger cites this in Siman Gimel in Choshen Mishpat. So, Siman Gimel in Shulchan Aruch is all about what constitutes a Beis Din. Ein Beis Din pachos mishlosha. Chol shlosha nikra Beis Din, afilo hedyotos, blah blah blah. Haim danan es adam bal karcho, im hanitva misarev leireh ledin, blah blah blah. So it's all about which Beis Din could force you to show up before them, not about rules governing the dispute. It's about which forum has jurisdiction. And so the fact that Rabbi Akiva Eiger brings this here is l'shitaso, I think. You see that because Rabbi Akiva Eiger sees this as a forum dispute, and Minhag will determine forum. But in the Marshach itself and in the Pesachei Tshuva, I think it probably doesn't really belong here because it's about which substantive law is going to govern, not about which panel. Rumi?
It is kind of interesting why it should matter whether or not, like, theoretically, you're following the laws of a specific place. It shouldn't matter who the Dayanim are.
Oh, this is a Meyerdicker question. I would just say that
Yeah, I understand that practically that's not really true, but
Yes, I know. This depends on a different sugya that we're going to see next year. About you might think that there's something. So people raise this objection. This is a very delicate issue because people say, well, if you follow Menachas Sochrim, why not just go to non-Jewish courts already? That's like the big taina. But we'll see next year, like the sugyas, and I think Amigarish, that, you know, Isra Kos has seemed to be like a big deal in Halacha. It's like prohibited to go to non-Jewish courts. So how do you reconcile all the fuss about Arkos with the Halacha's embrace of Menachas Sochrim here? Right, yeah. Romy, your intuition is what?
Yeah, I mean, I could explain that. But
how do you explain it?
Meaning, you could just, meaning for like there are many other. I don't know. For example, this is just one. You know, like it looks bad. It like looks like you're giving authority to other people. You set up a system where the people that you listen to and look to for leadership or whatever decision making are not the people that we.
Good. Yeah, I agree. But I would just say some of those reasons might equally apply to a panel of Venetian merchants, right? Meaning you might say, who do you grant authority to resolve disputes is something the halacha sees as.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say then Beit Din should, meaning that, to me, that totally explains why Beit Din should be the ones making the decision based on Menachas Sochrim. I just think it's interesting that you'd even think that you should it should be necessary to go, like I'm thinking about it from the other direction, like why should it be necessary to go to any of these other people, either the courts or the, you know, the arbitration boards or whatever, if like the point is just okay, you're following the law, so you're following the law, it shouldn't really matter that you don't go to them, you know, either of those.
You're saying the other way, meaning that why should the halacha ever allow you to go to the Sochre Venice to decide.
I mean, yeah, I understand why you shouldn't be able to go to them, even though you are allowed to follow Menachas Sochrim. It's interesting to me that anyone, or meaning that you'd think
like the Rikki Vager point,
it would be necessary to go to.
Right, right.
There should be any reason for that.
Yeah,
even though I get into it, like, you know, like it makes sense to me, obviously, that different courts and different
expertise.
Yeah, like think about things differently.
Right. I mean, you might say, oh, like the merchants, they really have expertise in these types of issues. So only they could solve it.
I would say even more than that. Like law is obviously not just about the law, like as we see all the time. Like the people who interpret the law are very important.
Exactly.
Even if theoretically everyone's going to follow Menachas Sochrim.
Totally. And it's a deeper issue also about, you know, let's say you think Pshara, as we spoke about this year, right? If Pshara is a big deal, so you might say, oh, the halacha is makbid that you're under a panel that's trying to push Pshara, right? Like even when you think of something like that. Okay, excellent. Great. So I just want to, in addition to the Marshach itself, you have this very nice discussion of Rikki Vager about maybe it goes beyond a plot. So the Marshach himself extends it beyond Kinyanim. Right, to all in Yane Asek Masa Vata, and even to the rules of decision that would govern resolving a dispute. Minhag Kivager, I think, goes even further and says Minhag could determine Gufa whether or not you go to a Besdin or whether you go to some panel of arbitrators in this industry specific Minhag case, where there's a Minhag to arbitrate in a specific forum. Okay, did you guys get a chance to start the Tshuva Sarashpa yet? Romy, yes. Benji, no, right? Okay, so I would say, should we start it now or just start it tomorrow? Did I say tomorrow? Do you guys want to cheer tomorrow?
can't do cheer tomorrow, sorry.
No? It's too much?
I'm heading to Cleveland.
Okay.
In the middle of a 7-hour drive.
It's great. What are you doing in the ride? We could have cheer during the ride, no? Just call in. It's pretty geschmack. Not down for that.
All right, I feel like maybe if there was like 20 people in this year, I wouldn't mind just like putting in my headphones and turning off my camera. But
it's too much attention on you, Benji. It's I hear that.
You'll hear all the hawk in the car, you know.
Right.
If you want to do 5 a.m. in Philly.
5 a.m. Are you here at 5 a.m. tomorrow?
Maybe. Still working that out.
What time are you getting here today? Are you both getting here
like
today? You're coming.
11:30. I think I'll be there at like 11:30, like PM.
Epic. She's here tonight at my house. No.
And yeah, me down.
When am I sleeping?
Always down. Ranger game.
Is there a Ranger game tonight?
Yeah.
Very nice. Maybe they'll show it at the Gush dinner. Okay, so maybe let's. So maybe let's stop here before we get into that. This Rosh was very rich. There's a lot of stuff in here. Extraordinary case. It's not really clear. What I want us to think about is the difference between Taina, what I listed here as Taina A, and Taina B. Basically, one of them is about who inherits. One of them is about spousal inheritance, and one of them is about one of them is about overriding spousal inheritance, and one of them is about overriding a father's ability to inherit his daughter, a blood relative inheritance. The Rashba seems to uphold A, but he goes crazy on B. That's one way of reading the Rashba. The question is, what explains that distinction in the Rashba? Like, so read it very carefully, and we will spend some time trying to make sense of this, especially distinguishing between the two claims. I'm going to send around an article from Rabbi Willig that I didn't send it around yet, but it'd be good anyway for you to read that before we do the Rashba together inside. Okay, so let's stop here. So definitely for next year, all the Rashba discussion, Shit Rashba discussion. I'll let you know what else I want us to see. There are a few other Tshuvas Rashba that I'm going to mention very quickly that are worth looking at. But I would say first, let's start with this major Yerusha question about Minog and Yerusha and what's this Rashba getting at. And then we'll look at some other applications. I'll tell you exactly what before next week then. All right? Shkoyach, guys. Let me know if you're what time you hit Philly tonight. I'm probably going to be back around 10 o'clock after this. Maybe earlier, maybe 9 o'clock even. All right? Great. Shkoyach.
Thank you.
See you later.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.